This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication. To me, having developed this program called Threshold, I believe, personally now, despite the fact that the problems we face are so overwhelming, I don't believe that anything is impossible to God if enough of us are aligned with His presence and His design. But what I call alignment, on the one hand, a fairly simple idea, is not a simple practice, because most of us, like myself, of course, are fallen from that state of spiritual awareness I call the divine presence most of the time or all of the time. I do believe, though, that God has reached out, and there are people who have acted in the sense of being aligned with His purposes. And among those are the founding fathers of our country. I believe that the original teachings and writings and manifestations of our founding fathers are very much in tune with God's plan for this world. And so, therefore, I endorse patriotism, patriotic songs, our soldiers who go and risk their lives for their country, and the very principles of our country. And when we played the Star Spangled Banner a few shows ago, I felt the same stirring I always did. I went to the same school that Francis Scott Key went to, St. John's College in Annapolis, the third oldest college in this country. And I sat and read stuff and did stuff under the Liberty Tree where he supposedly had sat so many years ago. And I feel stirred by patriotic feelings. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But how can you be stirred when what you see is the opposite of what I would consider a patriotism aligned with the vision of our founding fathers? What do you think, Ken?
I agree with you 100%, and that's why I called the book A Patriot's Act, because Actually the act of Ahmed, the main character in the story, he's the one who's held in Guantanamo detention camp, but he's actually a U.S. patriot. He loves the United States. He believes in the American dream. He was living the American dream. And that's why I called it A Patriot's Act. So I hope that some of your listeners will go out there and buy it so they can read about what was actually done in their name.
It's a very interesting read, and I think the fact that it's told as a story will grip some of your readers even more than they would by reading sort of cold, dried material.
Right.
But I think it's very important that people, well, patriotism itself, it's something that involves our emotions. It's not just our minds. And we need to be able to preserve some of these more sacred and important feelings, which are now being crushed by the abuse that our country is wreaking on its own citizens in the world.
We have to also watch out for abuses of the use of patriotism, because the government will often try to appeal to our emotions that you were talking about in order to make us do things that we wouldn't otherwise normally do. And it's nothing new. When Hitler wanted to do his thing in Nazi Germany, he used patriotism to get everyone to play along with putting people in death camps and objectifying black people and Russians as communists and saying that they could just be basically wiped off of the face of the earth like a bug. And this is nothing that we believe in this country or in our Constitution or that the Founding Fathers said. So I think we have to remember what happened, you know, with Nazi Germany and compare it to what the government's doing now and say, no, not in our name.
Yeah, I think that you got it when you said you're talking about the way you look at people as you objectify them, you make them into objects. They become non-human beings. I know because my family, a lot of them died in Polish concentration camps. Some of them fought in the Warsaw Ghetto, I'm told. Some of them escaped from Russia to come here for freedom and also from Romania. So I come from a family that has experienced a lot of persecution. I grew up in Long Island, but I had, you know, these thoughts that of what had happened to my family just, you know, a few decades ago. It's horrendous that the land of liberty and freedom should become this black site and people not knowing what's going to happen next. Yeah. I think that the term false flag is very interesting because you talk about a false flag when you emulate something against your own citizens. And a false flag is what this patriotism, the pseudo-patriotism, is about.
And it's interesting that this objectification and has actually come to U.S. soil and as is manifesting itself in this is what the Black Lives Matter movement is trying to point out, and this is what my book Unreasonable Force is all written around, is police brutality. We have a police force now that's been militarized. Basically, we have boots on the ground in our backyard, and they're objectifying you know, their targets. And one of the targets they objectify is anyone they see who's black. And that's just not right. Just because a person's black doesn't mean they're going to shoot you, you know? This is why there's such an outcry, and that's why I was compelled to write that book.
Yes, I think that's another kind of psychological shadow over America, the militarization of the police force. And here's another really... another shadow, which I don't think is too subtle, but it's a little bit subtle, which is this this way we're searched and when we go to an airport.
Oh, yeah.
I know the story
know
of Jesse Ventura,
like,
actually left the country because
when
his,
I come back. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I feel like a criminal when I go through security, and then when I come back, you know, from an overseas trip, when I go back to the United States, everybody on the plane feels like a criminal, basically. And, you know, they're coming to, most of the people are coming here to have a vacation, to have fun. You know, they've saved their money all year long and they're going to go to America or they're going to go to Las Vegas or New York. They're looking forward to it. And when they hit the ground, they're being treated like a bunch of criminals. You know, welcome, guys, right?
Yeah, it is a kind of mind control technique. What you do is you slowly and carefully make people afraid of doing a lot of very ordinary things. And then after a while, they're so afraid they don't say anything. And when they don't say anything, that kind of creeps into other areas of their life. So they become politically
mute. Not only do they not say anything, they close their eyes to what's happening around them, which is the worst part.
And you know, the fact is that a lot of the people who were probably involved in these atrocities as civilians in Nazi Germany, you know, kind of going along with seeing their neighbors having all their property stolen from them and being thrown onto trains that led them to death camps. That was a slow, even though it happened rather fast, it was also kind of a slow process. But you can, in other words, it was step by step, lie after lie, fear after fear, and so suddenly these people are basically moral automatons.
And it's all done by objectifying the victim. In other words, it's not easy, but what they do is they put a human being that you're concerned with. It's okay to put this person out of their house and into a death camp because they're not a human being. They're some kind of a bug. They're lower than us because we're the best. It's us against them. And this us against them mentality is very, very damaging.
Yeah. Well, I want to turn for a while to return to the bees. Mm-hmm. We're talking about colony collapse disorder. And yeah. I'd like to just go into this a little bit more. Why don't you kind of explain what it is?
Sure. Colony collapse disorder is a term that was formulated in about 2006, and it's used to describe a phenomenon where the beekeeper would come and pull the top off his hive, to check the bees and find out that all the adult honeybees that were supposed to be working in the hive have all disappeared, and they've left the queen and all the babies alone, basically to die. And the statistics are that up to a frightening 40% of hives are lost this way each year. And it's been classified as colony collapse disorder, but it's really not a disorder or disease per se, as just to describe the problem.
Do you recall when this first started, when this first came to the attention of people in America?
It was around 2006, and they didn't really know what the cause of it was, but a bunch of think tanks started studies to try to figure out what was happening, because obviously the bees are very important. You read from my book before, they pollinate all flowering plants. Basically, if we didn't have the bees, we would have we would be malnutritioned, and that's just the selfish part of it. Not counting what they provide for all the other animals on Earth.
Well, what happens? Go into a little more detail about what happens when pollination stops or is reduced to almost nothing. What happens to the plants?
Well, plants can't propagate themselves without plants. Plants are immobile, so they can't have sex, basically. And evolution has developed a system where the plants and insects have a symbiotic relationship. The insects are attracted to the plants by their nectar, and when they come to suck the nectar, the pollen attaches to their legs and bodies, and then they move to the next flower and deposit the pollen, and in that way, the plant is pollinated and the insect is fed. So this is how butterflies and bees and bats pollinate most plants on Earth. That's why it's so important. If we lose the bees, if we lose the bats, and we lose the butterflies, we lose the plants. And by the way, they make oxygen, they prevent floods. They're pretty important to have.
Ah, yes. It's sort of like surrogate reproductive organs or mobile ones,
basically.
Right?
Basically, I mean, these ecosystems have evolved over millions of years, and the insects are important to pollinate the plants, and then when the plants are pollinated and they produce the seeds, they surround their seeds with fruits, and the animals come and they eat the fruit and throw away the seed wherever they finished eating the fruit, and in that way the distribution system. So there's kind of what you're saying about spiritualism and God, there's kind mm-hmm. of like a divine plan for this whole thing. And when we come in and we start to monkey around with that and try to change the course of things by killing all the bugs, for example, because we want to grow more crops, we're actually screwing up these ecosystems and to the point where we're doing damage that's permanent. And it's going to change the way we know the life we know it on Earth is for us right now if we don't stop.
I think it's really important. Right now, we're going to take a break. And first, we're going to listen to a song called Gifted by, again, this amazingly talented singer-songwriter, Stephanie Sleeden. And this is actually about singer Robert Johnson.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro.
got your gifts from the devil. Your lyrics uplifted because they're on a new level. Look to the left, look to the right. There's a devil on my shoulder, or is he hiding from sight?
A Spanish treasure ship sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God! Are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, the Thrice Born.
This is Johnny Blue Star. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welsh for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for great entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welsh. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelsh.com/CD. That is patriciawelsh.com/CD. You won't be disappointed. I'm with Miss Johnny Blustow with Ken Heady, who's written a lot of books. And right now we're focusing on particularly a book called Bless the Bees. And I'd like to quote from this, Ken, if it's okay.
Sure.
Since 1972, feral honeybees in the United States have declined 80% to near extinction, and domestic bees in the United States are down to 60%. Since 2006, the epidemic among honeybees has been referred to as we've spoken of before, Ken, colony collapse disorder, CCD, describing the disappearance of entire colonies of bees. Many native pollinators, such as native bees, bats, birds, wasps, and flies, also face extinction due to habitat destruction, climate change, lack of biodiversity, and the use of pesticides. Among the causes cited for this disaster of epidemic proportions are parasites, the decrease in abundance and diversity of wildflowers, insecticides, and genetically engineered foods, GMOs, that create their own synthetic pesticides, which kill bees as well as other insects, have been shown to be harmful to humans as well. I would like to focus for a second on GMOs and exactly how this biotechnology works inside of the bee, so to speak, and in the plants when they're engineered.
Okay. The GMOs were brought on by a big campaign by the chemical companies based on lies, basically. They said that they were going to increase yields and they were going to feed the world. But what they really have done is they have enabled them to extend their patent. I'll explain this in a second.
Okay.
But the research about GMOs led me to create my first novel, which is called An Involuntary Spy. Some people have described that as Snowden meets GMO. It's about a biologist who works for a large biotech company who discovers that his company and the government are in collusion to hide the dangers of GMOs from their consumers, which is exactly what happened. About 20 years ago, the industry snuck all this stuff on your table because they basically control the USDA and the FDA. So I'm pretty proud that this book is being used as course material at Columbia University in environment and sustainability courses.
That's great.
So, yeah. So with GMOs, we have to understand the way that farming changed after World War II, which is something I mentioned before. Before World War II, we had basically farms that were used, that were fertilized with organic fertilizer. We didn't have widespread use of pesticides that we have now. But after World War II, farming became industrialized. Forest ecosystems were destroyed to provide large plots of farmland. Instead of rotating crops, factory farms planted the same crop, and chemical fertilizers were used as well as pesticides to kill pests and increase crop yield. As a result, our groundwater and our ground is being contaminated with these farm products, which means you, the consumer, are eating and drinking these poisons along with your food. What they did with GMOs, and their objective was to engineer crops that resist pesticides, which means that in their crops that are pesticide resistant, they can spray an entire farm with the pesticide and it kills everything except for the crop. But
yeah.
What happens is you're getting that pesticide in the food that you eat, because once it goes into the plant's tissues, it doesn't come out. The other type of GMO that they're engineering actually makes its own pesticide, because it engineers a bacteria that's commonly found in the soil, but when it's done inside the plant, for example, corn and soybeans, it creates a super pesticide. And what it does is it explodes the insect's stomach. So the bees that are actually foraging on these flowers are getting a dose of this pesticide, and in doses that it's not enough to kill them, it's making them so they're disoriented and can't find their way back to the hive, and that's contributing to colony collapse disorder. So these two types of GMO food are the most prevalent now, and you're finding them in every processed food. So basically everything you eat in a box, bottle, or can has got it. You with me, Johnny?
Yeah. Could you go into the Monsanto patent situation a little bit more?
Sure. Monsanto had a patent on a herbicide that's called glyphosate, and it's used in their most popular product, which is Roundup. Roundup is the most common herbicide used in the world. And their patent was about ready to run, because as you know, patents don't last forever. So it was going to expire, which means that anybody can make glyphosate, and they're going to have this multi-billion dollar market taken away by competitors. So they said, look, here's what we'll do. We'll make a crop that resists our glyphosate, and we'll own the patent on that crop. In other words, we're not just going to own the poison, we're going to own the seed itself. So if you want crops that don't die, you're going to buy them from us. And once a farmer buys these seeds, they have to only plant those seeds by contract with Monsanto, so they become slaves of Monsanto, basically. That's the reason behind the creation of Roundup Ready crops.
That is just so, I mean, that's so sinister. It almost really seems like bad science fiction, doesn't it? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It does seem that way. I mean, and people often refer to these as Frankenfoods because of the fact that they are not safe. When these foods were first being put through the FDA, there were scientists at the FDA had said, hey, we've got to have testing done on this stuff. This stuff we've got to check and see if it's safe or not. But thanks to Michael Taylor, who was a bigwig of the FDA, who originally came from Monsanto, and now he's the head of the FDA, policy formulated called generally recognized as safe. In other words, if this thing looks like an ear of corn, who cares if it's got poison inside of it? We're going to assume it's safe. So all of these foods got passed on the assumption that they were safe because they looked like they were safe without any testing. No GMO foods are tested in America. They don't have to test them at all.
They take the word of the
chemical company that it's safe. And that's it.
Wow. That is so sad.
It's unbelievable.
But isn't it like most of our problems, politically, scientifically, it's money. I mean, money is driving these incredible crimes against humanity and the planet.
It's money. And you know, the people with big money are the ones, like President Carter said, you know, basically, you've got to have at least $300 million now to be elected president. That wasn't true in his day. You can't run on a platform like Bernie Sanders, who wants to discuss the issues. You've got to have, you know, $500 million in your pocket. And this is big money. And when people put up big money for politicians, they expect to be paid back. They're buying it. They're not getting it. They're not doing this out of the goodness of their heart. They want a profit. And the profit is when the politicians, when the appointments come up at FDA and USDA and all the governmental agencies like the SEC, everyone that's supposed to be watching the industries, guess who they're appointing? The top people from the industries that are being watched. They're watching themselves. They're making their own rules.
It's really strange. It's like when the CIA director, Al Dulles, who was fired by Kennedy, became one of the most important components of the Warren Commission. You just wonder about these things. It's really strange. We're going to go to a break now with a little musical interlude by Edgar Ahrens, and then a few commercials, and we'll be right back.
Is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here, there's too many of them!" Again, we saw the Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
Nowadays, if you are a serious business person, just getting assistance from someone with a license and a bit of experience may not be sufficient. In fact, your realtor actually needs to be knowledgeable enough to be one of your top advisors. Whether you are facilitating a giant merger or selling your company, there's a lot at stake besides your finances. There is the future value of your current investment, financial freedom, integrity, and overall reputation. If you need this kind of assistance, Sandra Laflamme is a real estate expert with the experience, reputation, and knowledge qualified to assist you in all your key transactions. Sandra Laflamme, real estate services with integrity and conscience. Contact her today at 888-366-8070. That's Sandra Laflamme at 888-366-8070. You know, we've been talking about how agribusiness is kind of threatening our crops, the pollination of bees, and just really, we're almost forced to, if we're really serious about what we eat, buying expensive organic produce and meat products. So this is kind of, you know, I'm thinking about big business, the old thing about the banks, too big to fail. It's sort of more like big enough to make everyone else fail. You know, I am not against prosperity. I'm not against wealth. But I am against wealth and prosperity when they just completely destroy the other people and the value of life itself. And I think that's what we're into right now, where this is the epic where these type of businesses are blanketing the whole planet with this darkness.
Unfortunately, I agree with you on that 100%. I wish it wasn't so, but this is what we're confronted with now, and we do have to make a response to that.
If you go into just a grocery store, you know, there is one thing that I love the grocery store that I go to sometimes to buy things, and I wanted this, just one salad dressing. One salad dressing that doesn't really have any sugar in it. Just a little, and yet almost all of them do, where they have high fructose syrup or some kinds of artificial sweetener, and which are things that are just not, they're not good for me. They may be good for some people, but they're not good for me, and I'd like to have a choice. But but no, the choice is sadly exists. If there was one salad dressing that didn't have sugar, and they got rid of it, and I try to get it back, and I still have failed.
You know, and it's not really sugar anymore, Johnny. It's hydrolyzed corn syrup, which is also GMO. And there's an act now that's called the Dark Act that the Congress is trying to pass to make it so states can't pass laws to require manufacturers put labels if they're using genetically engineered food, so people won't know what they're eating.
That's just great, Ken. Let's not have any more labels. I know that certain number of additives, maybe sometimes dozens of additives, are there in trace amounts in food, and they haven't done necessarily any research on it, and they definitely don't tell you what's in it.
No. They don't, and basically, you know, you can distrust anything that's in a box, bottle, or can, so look at it very carefully. But, you know, beyond that, they're talking about sneaking the actual produce that's genetically engineered and selling it to you without knowing you're buying genetically engineered corn or whatever. And I think that's a crime. I think people should have a right to know what they're eating, because, you know, some people are going to be sensitive to things, they're going to have allergies, and they want to know what they're putting in their bodies.
I want to point out another thing. This is a little bit of a digression, but to show the extent to which people have been actually, they've been insensitized, is just to look at any, I would say, 9/10 of the pharmaceutical commercials, where they're talking about these drugs, and they're showing people playing on swings and eating barbecue and everything else, and they spend at least half the time talking about how the drug can disable you, can cause all kinds of terrible reactions, and even kill you. And people just buying these pharmaceuticals like crazy, and they're raising the prices as high as they possibly can. So I think that we are in a domain of mind control. And it's a subtle kind of mind control. It's a creeping kind of mind control. But we need to wake up. And I know that there are friends of mine I've seen who've actually suddenly woken up. And mm-hmm. suddenly they start to look at what's going on around them. And it's a sad story. What can we do about this? Is there anything we can do about to save the bees?
Go ahead, Johnny.
I said, is there anything we can really do about colony collapse disorder? Is there anything we can do to save the bees?
Yes, we can. In French, they have a saying that there are no problems, there's only solutions. So that's the way we have to look at it. And the solution lies with each one of us, individually. If we each do one little thing, and we all do one little thing, we can help save the bees and our environment at the same time. One of the things we can do is change our eating habits. Like you said before, organic foods are expensive, right?
Yeah.
But if more people buy them, they'll produce more organic foods and they'll become cheaper. If there's more demand for them, prices are gonna go down. So if you can possibly afford to buy organic food or local farm produce, where you can actually ask the farmer what's in the food, you're going to have a healthier food, and you're also going to contribute to a more healthy environment for the bees. Now, let's say there's something even more simple that you can do. Plant a flower. If you have a garden, plant a flower that bees like. In my book, there's a whole page of things that they like, but they like stuff basically that smells. So verbena, flowering herbs that you can also use in your cooking, like thyme and rosemary. And a variety of wildflowers will make your garden or balcony beautiful, but it will also help the bees. My wife and I have taken up this cause to show people how important bees are to us, because we really need to care about them if we are to save them, because they can't speak for themselves. We have to speak for them. But even though they can't speak for themselves, they're trying to tell us that they're in trouble. And if they're in trouble, that means we're in trouble. So we need to talk to on their behalf to our children, our friends. We need to speak to our representatives in government and tell them that, hey guys, we're the ones who put you in office with our votes, not the PACs and super PACs that put hundreds of millions of dollars in your pocket. It's us. We're your bosses. Next time we go to the polls, we're going to be voting for someone who cares about our health and cares about our environment more than they care about your personal wealth plan.
You know, speaking of things you could do about the bees, I heard an interesting proposal on a film by Patty Greer, she's a great filmmaker. She specializes in stunning crop circles, but she has a movie called The Shift Has Hit the Fan. And one of the people in the show talks about how we can turn our lawns, the lawns that we have, you know, that we mow all this grass and we waste all this water, we can turn them into herb gardens. So we can we can create edible grass front lawns, edible front lawns. I thought that was an interesting solution, and it's an example of we have capacities and resources that we don't even look at to be able to solve problems.
Oh yeah, and that practice that you're talking about, making an herb garden instead of a front lawn, it's actually going to help the bees as well. Anybody can plant a flower. And by planting a flower, just even one, if we each plant one flower, we're going to save bees. And we're going to save ourselves in the process.
Well, you know, it's just... we ought to have some buttons. Anyone can plant a flower. Well, just tell us a little bit about the children's book you wrote about the bees.
The children's book is basically a Bless the Bees version for grade school. And it tells grade school kids with illustrations that my wife provided with photographs of the bees up close with her macro lens. It educates them on pollination, on bees, what the problems our pollinators are facing, and what even the children can do to help solve the problem. Like I said before, anyone can plant a flower. Well, a kid can plant a flower too. And I believe so strongly about this book, and I'm really happy that it's being used in Baltimore public schools in their second grade curriculum. But I feel much about this message of the book that I created a reading of it on YouTube that anybody can enjoy for free with their children. So if you go on YouTube and look for ABC, it's like ABEESEE, you can actually have a
that's good.
ABC. The entire book.
Well, I want to see if we can play a song by Patty Greer, who I just mentioned, who wrote something called I Want My Planet Back. I think that this song really embodies the sense that we all have that we're talking about right now, that somehow all this wonderful nature, this wonderful Edenic planet that we have, has been kind of totally been overshadowed by this addiction to money and power. It's hard to understand that psychology, isn't it, Ken?
It's hard to understand, because with all these wonderful things, for example, if we lost the bees, if you quantify it for profits, right? It's $173 billion a year lost. I mean, that's got to hurt someone's profits. They can't be the only ones on the planet that are trying to make money, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just that somehow this green dollar is replacing this green planet.
I agree.
So we're going to take a commercial break. Composer Edgar Arend for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had 2 seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the 1st season. Pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for a television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com. You know, if you want to hear and see some more of Patty Greer's work as a filmmaker and also some of her soundtracks, you can go to pattygreer.net, and also you can find some of her songs on YouTube. Wonderful songs, just like the one we just played, I Want My Planet
Back. That song was great.
Ken, you know, tell me something about your ultimate goals as a writer, and what kind of platform do you use to let the people know about your work? How can people buy your books and get in contact with you?
Well, a Patriots Act is actually tradition. You should be able to go to any bookstore and order it. Also, I think you can get it from Walmart and Costco. You can order it from them. But you can also get it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The rest of them are self-published, and they're available on Kindle and paperback from Amazon, and the audio versions of the books are available on Amazon and also iTunes. You can also go to my website, which is kennetheade.com, kennetheade.com, for information on any of my books. The whole point of my books is that people like to compare me to John Grisham because sometimes he'll like to wrap a story around an issue. I think, as we were talking before, that people learn when they're told stories. People learn that our brains are wired to learn from stories. And all of my stories are wrapped around an important social issue. So as long as there's going to keep, as long as we keep having important social issues, I'm going to keep writing. And I hope people keep reading so I can keep writing.
Yeah, I think it's great that that anybody who has something to say can actually get it out there if they want to. And of course, it's much better, I think, in many ways sometimes, you know, to use a traditional publisher. But you can go out there without doing that. I mean, I grew up and tried to be a writer at a time when a platform like that didn't exist at all. It's a wonder we can have conversations on Skype all over the world with people we care about in other countries who we may never even meet personally. We can do all kinds of wonderful projects in film and books and music all on the internet. So I think it's an important part of our freedom and an important way that we can get out this message that we have. People who hear our program, Threshold, they can go to YouTube. They're going to be able to find all of our programs a few days after we broadcast them, right there on YouTube, the whole program. And you'll be able to find this one, and you'll be able to, you know, get a link and send it out to all your friends. If you think this program is important and you think that Ken Eddy is doing a really great job in describing some of the important issues we've talked about, torture or, you know, big colony collapse, tell your friends. Send out that link. I would like to thank a lot of people who have been involved in this. We have songwriters like Stephanie Sleven and Zayda Nathan and Bonnie Blazak, who we hear fairly often. We have Edgar Ahrens for his music. Patricia Welch, who has performed for us and had a whole program devoted to her amazing career. I really thank these people for coming, coming here to Threshold to provide their talents. And finally, an homage to the great Hasan Khan. Hasan Khan, who has helped me with the websites, YouTube promotions, commercials, and many other elements supporting the show. And thank you, Kennedy. Thank you for coming on board and telling us your story.
My pleasure, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Just one more question before we go. You mentioned before you'd like to see these books become movies. So would I. I would like to see some of these things start to permeate the airwaves. And the airwaves and go to a theater and watch your movies. So I want to say thank you so much, Ken. Thanks for coming here, and see you next week on Threshold Radio.